I'll be taped shut up today. But I can say, I can't complain. After all, I made those noises, but I'm going to be more careful after this. So this is going to be a much duller lecture, you can be sure of that. Well, for 200 years, the world believed with Johann Gottlieb Herder, and as he believed, that Egypt, in spite of an imposing facade, as he puts it, could offer the human race little more than poverty of ideas and stagnation of thought. But what put the Egyptians out of phase with the rest of the world? What gave us that oppression? We mentioned this before. We have no common ground at all. It's the totalitarianism. It's the Das ganze andere, what the Egyptians are talking about, something way out there. Were these people crazy? Yes, they decided they were. They were weak-headed and so forth. Well, we saw about that anyway. What put the Egyptians out of phase then with the rest of the world was their stubborn fixation with this one problem, a problem which transcends in importance everything else. C.P. Sewell tells a story in one of his novels about the Cambridge scientists of the 1930s. When they gloried in the consciousness of standing at the all-time peak of human intellectual attainment. And from time to time, he says, they would be filled with stabs of sickening insecurity when it occurred to them what their real situation was. And he says, then they were whistling in the dark when they were alone. In the crowd, they gloried, and they were triumphant, and they knew their place. But when they were alone, just like the rest of us, the terrible question faced them, after all. Now, the Egyptians were willing to face up to that all the time. They never gave it up, but we gave it up. Of course, they gave it up because they had given up on the problem as already solved. In Catullus' phrase, una nox perpetua dormienda. After this, we have one black night of nothing, one endless black sleep of nothing. That's what we have to look forward to in the famous fifth ode of Catullus. Una nox perpetua dormienda. Well, so that was solved, but it's not a solution that satisfied the Egyptians. It satisfies us. We say, well, but we have to face up to it. We can't be children anymore. We don't believe in Santa Claus anymore. We can't bother with such things. But then when the time comes, as C.P. Snow says, even the greatest of them was petrified with stabs of sickening insecurity. Well, the Egyptians kept working on this problem all the time. And not only because no one can escape it, but because they believed it could be solved. Nobody else did. They found out it couldn't be. They felt that it had been solved by people before them in their tradition. The problem, as we know, was to unite spirit and body of man in permanent union, the resurrection. No people felt more keenly the limitations of mortality. People knew that when you're dead, you die dead. Imhotep's famous reflections on old age go way back in the Old Kingdom. And they're good. They see how things go. And then these vivid descriptions of the decays of corpses and so forth. The Egyptians are right in on that. They recognized, more frankly, the finality of the death of the body than perhaps than anybody else. So there's little to be hoped for in that direction. You're not going to get a solution there. Well, as the Book of Mormon tells us, right, to lie and to rot and to lie, to rise. To rise no more, you see this. In the normal course of things, we have to face up with the second law of thermodynamics, and everything runs down, and we die and rot. And as we're told in the Book of Mormon, unless there was a power counteracting that, we would rise no more again. That is the story, the way nature tells it. We're rot and decay, and that's that. What can you do about getting over it? What can you do about reversing that process? Well, the Egyptians knew they couldn't do it themselves. It wasn't with man to do that. And the best you could do is to keep the body on hold in the best possible condition until a higher force could intervene. This is a special purpose, incidentally, of the hypocephalus. We saw already. It's to keep the line open to the other side, to the celestial power source there, indefinitely, preserving the spark of life in the body. That's what it does, remember, preserves the flame, the spark of life in the body, in the head, actually, perhaps the pineal gland, I don't know, after all the other vital signs had ceased, against the day when the spirit, that is the Ba up above, could again come down and take over, Yuri Hewitt, the affairs of the body, unite with it. There's no question of magic here. Magic is, by definition, It can do anything, and it knows no limitations, and it needs no explanation. It's just magic. It's the magic ring, the magic staff, the magic book, the magic robe. If you have it, it works. That's that. Doesn't even work by faith. The magic is a gadget and nothing else. And that's ever been a convenient tool, you see, for those who wanted to explain what they couldn't explain. They use magic and evolution alike to explain, say, other people's religion and so forth. When you're up a tree, you say, well, it was just magic. They believed in magic, and that settles that. And so we put them on that shelf for all these years. Today, it's widely accepted, but recently, that the Egyptian approach to the big problem was a scientific one, formulating problem and solution in terms that resemble those of physical science. Everything takes place in the real cosmos. They insist on that first of all. It's not a spiritual in the sense of non-material and so forth. The forces of work like those in quantum physics are real, but they're imponderable. You don't have to explain them to believe that they're real. Their existence is confirmed by the invisible effects they produce. You don't know what gravity is, but you know what its effects are and so forth. And the reality of the other world is as real for them as its nature is indescribable. It's totally different, yet it belongs to the same universe of discourse. The Egyptian, like the Hebrew singer of the 19th Psalm, feels himself both overawed, yet strangely at home. He belongs there. You read that 19th Psalm I was going to, but we won't have time for that now. And you realize they're looking at this as very, when he says the heavens declare the glory of God, the firmament shows his handiwork, they really mean it. And so what comes down then, back to where we were, from above is the light. You remember, you got to get us going forever now. And that they call ray. Notice there's still no agreement as to how that's pronounced. You can call it ray, some call it ri, some call it ra, and rao is what they prefer to call it today. Take your choice. Still, here, just one little monosyllable in the commonest word in the language, and we still don't know how it was pronounced. That's how much progress we've made in the grammar and so forth. That's amusing, isn't it? State of darkness. Ray comes down into the darkness to illuminate it, and it's not an abstraction, but a real person. Osiris is there. That's the darkness, you see. But it's you or someone you know. That is you. You identify with that right off. Ray, we are told in the litany, can take innumerable forms when he comes down. So it's not the sun that's there. In fact, it lists between 75 and 76 basic forms that Ray can take. It doesn't have to be the sun at all, as far as that goes. Naturally, what suggests most of us suggests is the sun, the one you think of first. That doesn't mean that he is the sun. They didn't believe for a moment that he was the sun. You find it's something different. Osiris is the condition of the dead as realized in the god, or in the king, or in any defunct person. The central theme, quoting Barta here, is the relationship between the deceased and the sun god in all of his manners and forms of appearances. That is, the identification, the gleichstellung of the dead with both you, the person, with both Ray and Osiris, the one above and below. We have some pictures here. Now let me see. We turn the thing on. Mm-hmm. And, yes, now, this is a very common theme. You see, the sun comes from above, and it says that above it, in red writing, it tells us what the title is. It says, must be recited. This is the recitation, the scripture. This is the scripture to prevent the body from rotting, to prevent the falling away of the corpse, the passing away of the corpse. The last one is a stinking fish there, you see, that's the corpse. Prevent it shall become foul and so forth. There, but you notice it's the light looks like the sun and the rays coming down, and that thing above it is the conventional sign for heaven. Now they knew that heaven didn't look like that, and they knew that the source wasn't the sun necessarily, could be something like it, but the rays do come down, and it comes on the body, and he lies there, and so forth. This is to prevent it. This isn't to cause him to be resurrected, to just preserve him long enough against the day of the resurrection. That's what it tells us, and that's the purpose of the hypocephalacy, to preserve you until it's time to be resurrected. Then that will come. Let me see if we will move forward now. There you get to see the dazzling rays of the sun coming down. It's more like sunlight now. And the same person, same on the lion couch and so forth. But here it's wrapped as a mummy. The dead person is another thing that's been noticed recently. The dead person, when he's represented, unless he actually is the mummy on the couch, when he's represented as doing something in the other world or being in the other world, he's never represented as a mummy. He's all represented as a person with all his body parts and passions there. So here's another one of that. And now here you notice the bird above, and I just found a statement. Here's an interesting statement from a new book by Becquerat on the royal kings' names, on the royal names of kings. It's the completest list of pharaohs made and are studied and so forth. That bird is holding the Shen sign, which is the sign of infinity. But he tells us about that. The Shen held by the vulture, not held by a vulture here, it's held by a bird with a bird's face. This is interesting because when it appears in the Joseph Smith, they said, it should have a human face. Joseph changed that to a bird. Not at all. At times it can be a bird, it can be something else. See, we saw the last time. This is your Ba. This is the person's own spirit. It's his Ba coming down. And let's see what Becquerel says about that sign he's holding. Hey, we got a spotter here that's rather good. It's like a laser. See there, this is what he's holding. That's the ring. That works, doesn't it? I hope it doesn't burn a hole in the screen. He says, is the earliest form of the cartouche. You notice the sign that the pharaoh's name was written in was the cartouche. It was like that, and then had this on it, the round cycle and so on. This says it was the earliest form of his name. Then he also says, it's also the gold Shen ring, the golden ring of the king that's worn by Ramses and others. And some interpret it as the cartouche, as the protection for the king. This is a sign of protection. It's a seal. It's a stamp. It's a ring. It goes around and around. Shem. They have a sign for a seal that has a little thing on it like that. And they call it chetem, which is the word chotem, which is the Arabic word for ring. A seal ring is a chotem, you see. Same thing in Hebrew as far as that. In all Semitic languages, this word chotem is both a ring and a seal. So that's what it is. A very old thing, anyway. Others like Gardner, he says. Others say it's a symbol. This is interesting. It's the symbol of the cyclical return of all life. This is the cycle of return. Gets back and back and back. I guess it has to have the ground to return on, because that's an interesting thing in the Babylonian, you know, because here we have a wheel goes around like this, and the wheel can be going 100 miles an hour, but the bottom is always standing dead still, like cutting the ground. If it wasn't, the wheel would be skidding if it wasn't still. And this is a mystery. A point on the wheel goes down, and then instantly it goes up. That's the solstice, when the year turns. So you can't measure the time. It's infinitesimal between going this a point on the rim going down and then going up. But yet it stands dead still. It does stand still, but for how long, you see? That's the point mort. A French scholar by the name of Karl Henzer wrote a book on that particular thing. But so that's an interesting thing. It goes down, it stands still, and yet it moves forward. And this is the great moment when everything stops. This is the moment that's extremely important. This is what the hypocephalus has to do with, among other things. So this is what Becquerel says about that. Snofru, the fourth dynasty, who is our pal, who is our boy, who is our patron, after all, the BYU goes to bat for Snofru all over the place. I think we've discovered much about Snofru, including a Snofru pyramid that nobody knew about before. And he's the one who first used it, as far as Becquerel's been able to find out, you see, in the fourth dynasty. He was the first to use the Shen ring with his name as a seal. So we still have this custom, the ring, the seal, the name, and so forth. And it's the person, it has a bird's face. Well, let's press another button now and see what happens. Here's the bird again, and it has the bird's face, the person. The other bird, in the Sensin papyrus, in the Book of Breathings, they say, all this has to do, it just has to do with the foul stenches of the corpse. This is just, the bird is simply to make a breeze to blow away the smell of the corpse. That's as far as they went in all this stuff. They didn't see anything beyond that after the Egyptians went into all this. I've had them tell me that. But here you see again, well, they're making the passes that are to resurrect the dead and not resurrected yet. But that's a strange one, though. Now here the light comes from above. The two eyes, notice they're both wedge-up eyes. Wedge-up means restore. It's through the power of the eye, through the power of vision, that this comes. There's this miraculous power of the eye. A great deal to say about that later. The wedge-up here, because the hypocephalus itself is a wedge-out eye, like that. And this is the pupil of the eye here. But it comes down from the sun to, you notice you'll find in our hypocephalus, there's the boat in between. That is the vessel, the spaceship, the vessel by which you traverse the immensity of space between wherever this comes from and where you are. Now, I always represent it as a ship, knowing perfectly well that it wasn't a ship, but a ship, you see, in the clear waters and now or elsewhere, stands in suspension. You look at something in the water along a clear Mediterranean coast or Crater Lake or something like that, and the thing, or in the West Indies, a boat seems to be suspended in nothing. You see it hanging there, you can see its shadow way down below, you can see the water line. It's suspension. So that's the best image you can have for a ship that's not on one side, it's not on the ground, and it's not in heaven. It's in between. It's in the state of suspension. And it transmits the right. It's transmitted. It's relayed, you see, through various stages. But this is the ship, and this is the Shemsu. This is the sign of the follower. This ship belongs, we went before, if you want to get into the other world, the best way you can do, you've got to hitch a ride. You do not have the capacity to do it yourself. So you have this formula occurs thousands of times. Let me become the follower of Ra or Osiris. If I become his follower, if I become his Shemus, see, that's a wanderer with his lunch, and it's tied on there. This is the very archaic sign of the wanderer's staff, a person who's making a journey, and it's one who's in a caravan. This is the follower of Ra. He, by getting in Ra's entourage, by getting into his company, he's guaranteed a place. Then he's guaranteed a place in his orbit. Then he gets taken into the orbit. See, we don't have the power to throw ourselves personally. We don't have the authority or anything else. But if I can get Ra, and this is a plea, it's asked on all tombs, everywhere you find it, take me into your company. Take me as one of those who may follow you and serve you, that I may be with you, that I may follow you to heaven. We see this a great deal. And so these are this is the way by which this is arranged. The person is still a mummy here, and here it is. See, there is the ship itself, and it's the sun's boat, but now it's the sun of the horizon. He's left the earth. But here again, you see, what about this light that comes from above? It was just raised before, but now it's not coming from the sun. It's coming from the head of Horus. Horus is the son of the deceased. Remember, the one who comes between, we'll mention this presently. And his head is upside down. Why upside down? Because he's coming down to bring it, to bring the light to him. And notice the light is a mixture. It's starlight and planetary light and all sorts. This is, the whole thing is cosmic. It belongs, it's astronomical. They think of it in terms of happening in real space and so forth. And these are the two women. This is the Muat, the sign of the mother and so forth. And this has to do with, this is Isis, mother, and Nephthys, the nurse. These are the two women that preside at birth, the Isis and Nephthys. So he's going to be reborn, but he's going to be reborn after this light stirs him. And it comes down from above, as I say, as starlight, as power. Notice these represent particles or bits of power of some sort. And the mixture of things, it's not just this, just light, you see that. And I say, and the horse's head is upside down, and he's going back here, and he's going to get on the ship, where he will be allowed to sit down. They always ask, give me a place in the boat. Is there a place for you in the boat? Have you got a place there? Have you made your reservations? Then you get in the boat, then you have it made. Then you get into the orbit of the sun, and from then on, you can continue in an infinite course. Well, we have a number of these. These are easy to find, there's so many of them. Oh, there it is. See, there's a real splash of energy comes down there. You see, those look like particles. It looks like something Feynman had drawn or something like that to illustrate the punch and power coming down. And here again, you see the signs, the Anak signs everywhere. There's life here. There's life. And notice, definitely, it's reborn here. Notice the light comes right down here. This is You'll notice here there are various twinkle twinkles here, but here there's a special star, the Dua, that comes in. And this is the Lord of the Lady of the Dua, the Lady of the Duat here, and here's the signs of life. They're bringing life. Horus is upside down, so he's going down to bring it. This is the sign of priesthood, power of the priesthood. This is the Was symbol of power. As you know, these are life. And he has to be renewed. He has to become a little child, so he's reborn. Like the sun, you see, there's a babe. That's the child of infancy, putting the yinup, the child that puts his finger in his mouth and so forth. And the apes that worship the sun at his rising, we have those that are hypersuffering, as the sign. He's holding, everybody's holding life signs, as we said the last time. The one thing the Egyptian wanted, after all was said and done, is to go on living. The theme is life. And you see it everywhere. This is life, this is life. You can never get away from these. They haunt you everywhere. And then finally, again, you get, see, this isn't the sun. Sun doesn't have wings. But it is, whatever it is, the highest you go, up there. So we have various degrees here. Now let me see. It says resurrection as the birth of the child in the solar barge. Well, I could have read that and found out for myself there. Probably the entire Metropolitan Museum. Now here you see is from the tomb of a king. You see, this is a famous one. Here he's shown lying right down. This is very much like facsimile one. Remember, we have facsimile one, the Pearl of Great Price, which we now see can't be taken without facsimile two. You have to take them together. The three always go together. See that later. But he is on the lion couch, but he is bestirring himself, you see. He's raising his hand and so forth. And again, now the bird that comes down has a human head. See? Does he have to have? Well, that's his own body. That's himself as far as that goes. He is Re, and he is Osiris, and he is the one that's to be revived. See about that? And then the inscription tells what he is. He's praying here, and again, the two ladies that are going to stir him to life again, they preside at the rebirth of the spirit. Well, let's see what wisdom we have here then. What comes down from above is like we mentioned that before, yes, haha. And they have an interesting quote here. Oh, here we are. One who finds this unreasonable should consider the opening verses of the Gospel of John, where the word light, the word, the light, the life, the sun, the truth, God, they're all the same. And the sun was God, and God was the word, and the word was the Logos. It could be the council, you'll include that too. Whenever you have the God making his council in Egypt, he consults the Pesach, he consults the Ennead, it's the great council. And Logos, as Richard Anderson pointed out years ago, Logos means council in Greek as much as anything. You say in the beginning was the council, and the council was pros theon, means in the presence of God, and all things were done by the council, nothing was done without it. You can use that perfectly all right. You don't have to. You can call the Logos in a mystic sense the Word, but the Word was God, you see. Well, what's going on here? This is no more mystical than the Christians get here when they talk about these things as spiritual. In the tomb, Re and Osiris embrace as equals and fuse into a single person, just as the body and the body and spirit are supposed. Now that's not mystical. How could they do it? Well, the body and the spirit do, they say. And this is from the famous 17th chapter of the Book of the Dead. By Curie's principle, that when two forces are absolutely equal, you have a perfect balance, like antimatter, they can't be perfectly balanced, according to Curie's principle, then nothing happens, you see. The solution is too simple. There has to be an imbalance and an irregularity there, and there must be a third party. That is Horus the Sun. That is just the one with the hawk's head here. It's not. This is the person himself. This isn't Horus. And the son of Osiris, as the son of Osiris, he is both, you see. He's the go-between. As the son of Osiris, he's licensed to do the work, Yerichu, it says, to do the work for his father. And what he does is the work of Re, who is also his father, lifting up Osiris in the resurrection. A technical statement of this particular operation has its own special terms chosen for it, in which the key figure is the ram, the all-in-all. I wonder if we have a ram here next. Let's risk it. Oh, no, here's another one. See, now here, that last one had a human head on it. You notice that. But this one doesn't. This is a perfectly good hawk here, as in the Joseph Smith one. And these other halves, and this is the test. Sobek, he was the patron of the royal family at that time. But again, he is raising a hand, you see, and bestirring himself. And this person is over, but the ladies are kneeling here. And the point here, again, is that the bird is the bird of light that's coming down to restore in answer to his prayer. Well, we'll see what the prayer is. And the, thank you. I say that solution is too simple. You can't just have the two forces. You have to have something at work on them, and that is the principle of the Son, who lifts up the Father. Ray, in descending to the depths, assume the ram's head, as does Osiris when he embraces and fuses him in order to rise again. A clear sign of that, we are dealing with the aspect of the resurrection, is this presence of the ram. Let's see if we can find a ram around here somewhere now. Oh, this is another one, where he's bestirring himself. The light comes down to various... notice the two eyes. The two eyes are still up there. But now, everybody knows that eyes don't have wings, but you see, you're perfectly free to put these together in any operation. It's just like juggling your figures around in an equation. You can do it if you know what you're doing here, if you keep equals functioning properly. And notice the way they have the light coming down in specs. But here, he's beginning to bestir himself. And notice he now is crowned with the solar crown. But here's more of them. Oh, this is a good one, you see. You don't want to get stuck with that as long as you have them. And this is Nephthys, lady of the temple, temple of the god. And this is Isis, the throne of the temple, making an offering coming forth. Here again, you have the mixers coming out. They're down low. This is more elaborate. See, but the boat comes up, and the steps are always indicated there. And he's going to sit on his throne in the end, but always you're going to get there. Your life signs all over the place. And he reaches the highest point. And here we get this heperu. As you know, now what the heper does, he changes his form. He flies the beetle. And the heper is changing your form without changing your identity. And we all do when you pass through life, you see, from the seven ages of man. You're not the same person you used to be. Yet you are the same person. But you're not 35 pounds and chubby face and golden hair and all that sort of thing. Not anymore, but it's still you. That's the principle of Heper. You change your condition, which you must do in the resurrection, while preserving your personality, your identity. You never lose it. That's the sign of Heper. And of course, the sign of praise here, Harakhti. This is Horus of the horizon, you see. Because when you pass from one world to another, you pass the horizon, of course. Horus of the horizon. And there he is in his ship. You notice he now wants to become a follower. He has become a follower of Ray. Here's Ray on the throne. He has become a follower and a worshiper here. And here he gives the henu. That's the sign when you go down on one knee and put the one arm to the square and the other to the compass. That's the sign that you're in the presence of God. That's the greeting of a divinity. When he comes down, everybody goes down and gives the henu sign like that. That's the henu sign. He's giving the henu sign too, you see. Here, I can't see that. I think that's the ba. Oh, that's the place where it happens. Well, anyway, these are the spirits of the spirits on both sides. These are the spirits or the powers of the land of the Tawi. This even has fish on it. Well, anyway, read it down there. Let us proceed. Oh, this is a good one. Well, my son took this one. This is a dendera. And you notice how they wanted to make this clear, to explain it. This is explanatory. This is a demonstration of the sort of thing. Here, this is right above where the king lay buried, you see. And this is a light well in the ceiling. And it tapers. It gets smaller and smaller. And the light rays come spread out this way. And those light particles, those energy particles are shown spreading out here, and they make the picture of the king here. He's lying here, and you see how the light comes from above and illumines his body while it's waiting in the tomb. There's the principle carried out in stone, you see, where they actually have it coming down and shining on him here. it's very impressive because it's really as if the light was coming right down. It goes up to the sky, you see. It comes way down here in the darkness of the temple, way down in the basement here, and it comes down and illuminates the king as he lies there on the lion couch. So they take this very seriously. Now here we get the ram's head, you see. So he says, this is what happens. When the sun god, when Re goes every night, see, the sun sets every night, and then he goes to the underworld, he must be down there if he's going to get out the other side. So he goes through that. He spends just as much time there as he does here. So he's really the sun in the underworld. And one thing recognized recently is very important is that Osiris is just as much a celestial god as he is underworld. It's the same way. They share equally. So this is, this is a Ramses, a king, you see. But here, there is the seal, but instead of the seal, you see, it's his coronation date. This is his Sed festival. Well, this is they have the coronation festival, the two thrones. So he assumes the throne, and that's the festival sign. And this is Akhet, and here's the lady, of course, Nephthys, and the two ladies giving the greeting as usual. But the king is, when he goes down into the lower world, he changes from the beetle. He changes his, well, he goes down as a hawk, but he changes from a hawk to a ram's head. And when he merges, he changes back again. But when he's down in the underworld, he's always represented with the ram's head. That he has is the moment of transition, the moment of change. Here are the two eyes, you see, and he's in the sun, but he is the son of the son of the underworld. Well, the Heparu, then he changes, takes another step and he changes to this. When he changes another step, he goes back again. Here's another festival. They're changing because this takes place at the New Year, as I say, at that point when everything is decided, when everything makes a sudden change, that's when everything depends on that moment. The king is aware of it. He's assuming his authority, his flail and his hook, you see, and he's putting on the blue crown here. And so it is the ram that signifies that. Here you see it. Remember those apes that are worshiping the rising sun when he comes up? Here he's coming up with the Ka symbol. It's a symbol of praise. But you notice he has the four heads. The central figure in the hypocephalus, though, has four ram's heads the same way. They face in all four directions. He's universal. He's God sitting at the center of the universe. Of course, they knew he didn't have that kind of head at all. But here is when he rises. Let's see. This is his prayer, praise to Re, the God, the Divine One, Re Harachti, the great God, the Lord of Heaven, the speckled verb, the Zab Shu, means variegated of feathers, because the speckled verb, who comes forth from the horizon of the Dua in the morning. So it's the morning praise so it's the sun rising in the morning, but he rises up as the sign of the resurrection is the ram's head. So we know what we're talking about, you see, and including with others. And here is Thoth, who is recording it. He keeps, everything has to be documented with the Egyptians. If it's not documented, it didn't happen. So he is Thoth, and of course they knew perfectly well that nobody walked around in a body like that with the head
of an ibis.
But this is, to preach a sermon is what they're talking about here. Then, so we said it was the ram. Now, this fusion is first mentioned in the Litany of the Sun in the tomb of Ramses II. But actually it's found everywhere. Today they've treated it, they've just studied it in the tombs of the great kings of the New Kingdom, where it's found there. A number of men have examined every one of these books. They're the other world books, the books of the underworld, the other world books. And they tell the story here in quite elaborate detail, and they're very lengthy, quite a collection of them. Yet you find it at every period. I'm just going to read a quotation here from do we have anything else interesting, incidentally? Oh, yes. There's your ram's head again, see? Now, this is a good example. This is the Mehen serpent. This could be something that's certainly suggested by a natural occurrence, because you find snakes when you excavate around these tombs. So a snake is watching over the tomb, makes it safe. We call the story by Kipling about that. the aged cobra. But no, the body is watched over and preserved. It's a protective thing, and you get that later on, uraeus and so forth. But here, you notice the eye is not a wedge-at eye, life in the womb, for some reason represented by a company of a serpent. See why that is? The serpent, again, is waiting. The serpent also is the one that's able to renew its life, renew its skin, like nothing else. But also, this is not the wedge-at eye. This is not the complete eye, the rejoined eye, the resurrected eye. This is the eye still in a formative state. And to show it's a formative state, and we're now in the underworld, and we have not yet been reborn, but we're just about to, this is that we have to start from here. This is the ram's head here, you see. And again, they're in this, in the womb here. This is supposed to show the sac, you know. There again, you see, who is it that creates? It's the ram. That's the ram creating man. That's Khnum creating man. It says Khnum creating, as it tells us here. With the disk of the sun, the rising sun, there's a bad drawing in this book, feathers of Mat, the prince of the universal order, creates man in the potter's wheel. If he's going to create him, who's going to recreate? See, who's going to bring about the resurrection? Well, the creator is, the same thing. But as a creator, and recreator, it must be the ram, you see. So that's the symbol. It's something is being created. It's something new is going to come out of it here. So he's creating man on a potter's wheel, very rare expression, and he's wearing the solar crown with the two feathers and with the ram's horns. So we're beholden to the ram. Well, this is a hypocephalus. We'll wait to leave that one there and see what comes next. Now, this, I'll just read you one passage from each of the Old Kingdom, Middle Kingdom, New Kingdom to show that this doctrine was always there. In utterance 259 from the pyramid text, you read, the king is Osiris in the dust devil. That's a Zalbagai, you see, whirling. The earth is the king's detestation. He's not reconciled. He's not going to slumber in his peaceful tomb. There's none of that at all. This is what it says here in the pyramid. The earth is the king's detestation. He will not enter into Geb, that is the earth, lest this king perish, and lest he sleep in his mansion on earth. The pyramid texts are for the king only, but later on everyone laid claim to the same rights and promises. And the idea is, you're not reconciled to staying here. The king's bones are made strong. His ills are removed. The king has become pure through the eye of Horus. He's healed that way. He's healed and restored. The eye of Horus, that's the inner, go-between is Horus, the sun. The eye of Horus is the power bestowed on his son. His ill is removed by the two kites of Osiris, those are the two ladies, Isis and Nephthys, who administer at his rebirth. Not only a healing, you see, but a rebirth. The king has dropped the cords of this earth. The king is bound for the sky. Well, see, he's not staying in the earth, you see. With Shu, he's the feather Shu represents. You get him, well, not here. But you get him, he is the one who represents the negotiation of space. It is light passing through space. It is space itself. It is the most tenuous of all mediums is Shu, and it's getting there. He is bound for the sky with Shu, but especially he is bound for the sky, usually as a beam of light. He's represented, Shu is, and he's going down with Ray. He's going to the sky with Ray. The king goes with Ray. He goes to heaven with Ray. This king comes with Ray. He has occupied his man. So he has joined the company of Ray, and he's now going up to heaven. He doesn't have to stay here. He's got somebody who can take him up, and it's Ray's father. And another one. There's another way they talk about the ladder a lot, and they show pictures of ladders. A ladder is knotted together by Ray before Osiris. These are the people you have to have in it. Ray, so that Osiris can get up there. A ladder is knotted together by Horus, who makes it possible, you see, before his father Osiris when he goes to his spirit. The one of them being on this side and one of them being on that side, while I am between them. Horus must be the go-between. He literally says it there. Well, here's some other ones. Then the coffin text, you read a spell down the Middle Kingdom nobility there. Hail to so-and-so, the dead person. You shall go up in the suite of the gods following Osiris, you see. And then he says, this gets you legitimate entry to permanent orbit. You shall go in peace with Ray, who is in the sky. You follow Osiris because Osiris is going up too. You follow him first, but in the end you're going to be with Ray. So this reads this way. Shall go up on the great west side of the sky in the suite of the gods, following Osiris. Legitimate entry into the permanent orbit with Ray. Another one says, and then you are a god along with Ray, who is in the sky, and with Osiris, the great god who is in Abydos. Either one you can have, you see. But if you're to do that, if you're to be eternal and everlasting, that's to be divine. I mean, nothing can be last forever if it has imperfections. It must be divine. So it keeps reminding the person himself, when you enter into this contract, then you are God too. Well, then here's another one. Horus goes about seeking his father Osiris. Ho so-and-so is the person's name. Your porters tell Ray that you have ascended as a god and descended as a god. You can come as you want and go as you want. Well, Horus, Osiris, and Ray, there is the cast again, you see. And the famous chapter of the Book of the Dead, we mentioned that before. I am a double Ba. I should have had a picture of this one. A two-in-one Ba, one who absorbs the other, who melds in, who receives in it, is called Chai. Chaiti, with two of the birds doubled together, so there are two of them. One who has absorbed the other, melds into him. Calls that the double trekker. Hornung calls that the double trekker, the double carrier, the double carrier of the person. And then the text asks, what can that mean? Answer, it is Osiris when he enters into Mendes. Mendes is the city of the sacred ram, the ram. The ram of Mendes is the one we're talking about here. And when he entered into Mendes, and there he found the Ba of Ray. The picture is here that Osiris comes, Horus, now I'll get it right. Ray comes down from the sky looking for his own Ba, you see. And he enters into Mendes and he sees it lying there, and it's the Ba of Ray. And thereupon the two embrace each other, thereupon they become a double Ba. Now as to the double bearer, or the absorption of each other, the receiver, that is Horus, the deliverer of his father. You figure that out the way you want to, you see. Finally, at the late period, from the tomb of Petosiris, Hail Osiris, Lord of Abydos, or Abydos, Lord of the men in Mendes, Thoth speaks the ordinances for your glorification. I come to you, I am Horus, I protect you, I cause you to live this day. Live, O Osiris, you have received the scepter of the stairway. You feast with all the gods, we've got a stairway picture here, you are united together with all of them. Then Khepri speech, that is the sign of the beetle, the sign of changing from one state to another while preserving your person. I grant that Osiris and then live. I have reassembled thy members. I have joined together thy parts, taking charge. I have made him to flourish among the followers of Ray. There again, you carry on by becoming a follower of Ray. You will not die. You will not be destroyed with your soul in the dot forever, never. So it's this infinitesimal fraction of a second in which they touch as separate persons, the spark leaps between them, they jump start the action again. They start the cosmos going again. It's just ground to a halt, that infinitesimal second when the point on the wheel isn't moving at all. That's when it has to take place in no other place. That's why it has to be done at a particular time and a particular place, that you become a follower and attendant by jumping on the merry-go-round, as it were, just as it passes you. When Ray changes his ram's head to a hawk's head, at the instant of renewal and rejuvenation, you are, now this is a Ba Yimi Rao, which is the same thing that is a Ba, the Ba which is in Ray, and you at the same time, you're is the Seruti Yimi Rao, which is the ram's head which is in Ray, and you are the same one. And so it's brought about that way. Now, we get to our subject. The strange providence that brought the Joseph Smith papyri from a family vault in Gurna, in the Thebaid. Incidentally, another member of that family has just been discovered. I don't have a picture of that. But it's a royal member, it's a king, belongs to the same family as produced the Joseph Smith one, and he has a hypocephalus of gold, of all things. It's supposed to be of gold. It was found in place under the head of the mummy, under the head of the mummy. Now, I just saw a picture of that. I haven't gotten one. It's just the news has just come out. I think it's quite wonderful. They've found a hypocephalus, and it's a golden under the head of a mummy, and belongs apparently to the same family. This is one family. This family here When it's described as coming from a big tomb with dozens, scads of other mummies in it, that's right. It's one family, a big family vault there. And the family relationships have been established by various people working on it, Mrs. Varga and so forth. The it passed from the family vault in Gurna in Theban to Kirtland in the Ohio. They called it the Ohio in those days, remember? Well, that's been the subject of much research and speculation. Now that happened, Jay Todd's book, a very good book on the story of the Book of Abraham, and James R. Clark's story of Pearl of Great Price. Incidentally, a film is being made of that now, that romantic story. A colorful and exciting odyssey of the documents, a tale worthy of Conrad or Kipling or Eric Ambler. As I say, it's being filmed now, being thought of that anyway. It's of no immediate concern to us here. I don't care how it got there. I don't care whether they found it in a bus station or where it happened. If it's genuine, that's all that concerns us now. For our purpose, the one thing is to be sure that our hypocephalus is genuine. And that can be quickly and easily determined by comparing it with other hypocephali, which will make it at once apparent which parts are authentic and which have been destroyed and replaced and so forth. Plainly, we have here a normal hypocephalus. Well, let's get with it then. Oh, excuse me, here, I can go back again. Now here's the first one I showed you. Now notice this is one in the British Museum. It's a very modest one, but it has just about everything that ours has, and in the same order. Now, Dr. Wilson said this was a Joseph Smith papyrus, a random throwing together of magic spells and symbols, nothing at all. They're not random at all. Hundreds of them, they follow the same pattern exactly. You see, here is figure one in the Joseph Smith, here's figure two, here's figure three, here's figure four, here is figure five, here is figure six, should be over here, here is figure seven, you see, and then 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 are texts, which don't appear here, you see. They're the panels on the side with the written text that are very important. Then 16 and 17 are down here, they say just about the same thing, and 18, 19, and 20, that's very interesting. It says this stands for the eight. Instead of drawing eight rams there, they just put one ram and eight strokes to show that it's eight of them, and thou art living here. Thou livest in the eight rams. You see why the eight comes in there, as Brother Jack Cross just mentioned. When you say a few, you mean eight in the scriptures. Well then, and that's 16 and 17, and number 18 in the Joseph Smith, number 18 is the rim, and it says just about the same thing as the Joseph Smith says here. Let's see what that is. So it's the same thing. It's not drastically different. It's very important though. And let's see about another one now. This is a splendid one. And this is the right side up and so forth. And again, you see figure one, figure two, figure three, figure four, and here's figure five. This is figure six now. That's a good figure six. Figure 7, I'm going to refer you to that later on, that's important, figure 7, figure 8, they're all here, all present and accounted for there, we'll consider them later and what's on them. Plainly we have in Joseph Smith a normal hypocephalus. Do you have his next, show us? No, this is one of the cruder ones, you say, but what does this have in common? Well, they're not all alike, you find one, some that are quite different, but remember out of over 100, 120 of them. So this is quite a number of them. But this one, you said, oh, there's number one, you see. There's number two, sure enough. There's number three, there's number four. There's number five, there's number six. There's number seven. And I say 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, they're inscriptions. 16, 17, it's not here, but 18 is there. And the main pattern's there. I mean, this is one of the more defective ones, but still, you see, you're following the same thing. Let's see what else we have here now. And then you can get so far, this has no resemblance. Somebody just allowing his fancy. As a matter of fact, this is the back of one of them. But notice here, you do have the central figure, but instead of four ram's heads, you have one. One is the head of a jackal, and one is the head of a cat. He's playing all sorts of tricks. But you notice the emphasis on the stars, on the astral. You say, this is... Incidentally, this is not funeral cult at all. These things were adapted to the funeral later on. They were all originally had to do with the temple ordinances, and they're only repeated at a person's burial, but they're the proper rites, like the temple ordinances with us. There are certain things repeated. But here you notice It's the stars that concern them. They have them all over the place here. And you see the starry heavens and the various signs. Well, here's life. This is the backbone, marrow in the bones. And incidentally, this is the navel string, is what the life sign is. It's tied at birth. So this is the life sign. They nearly always found together. And this is west. This is the authority of the priesthood. This is what Gardner calls the authority of utterance, authority. But here again, he lets his fancy go. Incidentally, notice these were not produced in a shop. No two are alike. The person, as Mrs. Varga showed, made them for himself. They were made by priests who knew what they were doing. Nobody else was going to see them, so they put their own fancies in and so forth. And they show particular skill, and they would leave things out if they wanted to. And this accounts for a lot of strange things that go on here. See what we have now. Now, this is the Joseph Smith, you see. This is with an overlay that was made after it was damaged. So this is what we have. Remember, on ours, this part has been replaced by borrowed hieratic symbols from somewhere else, you see, to fill it out. But this is the way it was when the one, the Joseph Smith copy was made. See, it was damaged. You can see this is an accurate overlay. They'd used a compass here, and by noting that figures are all in the proper place, exactly where they should be, rather quickly drawn out like this, but correctly and properly spaced. That's important. This shows this is a good, accurate picture of what it was like before. And then let me see after you fix it up here. Oh, this now, here's a good one. This is the Vienna. And you notice this is almost exactly like the Joseph Smith. Very closely like it. There's a 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so forth. Looks just like the inscription up here is like it. These are different, of course. Thou noble God, who causes that which it's afar above, who exalteth the gods. And then he sees, thou great gods, it's backwards, incidentally. Should be reading in the other direction. Thou great God, who livest in the... Now, this part is on the Joseph Smith one, who lives in the pre-existence, who liveth in the pre-existence. Then he breaks it all out here. Come to, he doesn't have the space for it, so he simply says, come to the Osiris, then the person so-and-so, justified. So he doesn't tell the story here, and this is just broken off here. But this is the only thing that's in common, that he has to mention somebody sleeping in the... He doesn't even have him sleeping, just has him in this. Here is that from another angle. You see it straight on, you see, yes. There it is, this is the one we just read on. Oh, this is the one on the other side. Oh, thou great God, thou noble one who causes to live by air, by breeze, by wind, or whatever it is, and that's broken off there. But others have it. But otherwise, you see, this is so close, you would say it came from the same atelier or from the same shop, but it isn't. It may have been written by the same hand. There may have been a priest who was particularly good at it, you know. And, yes, here it is, you see, in the pre-existence. And then it says, Yimmy, come, you see. And that's all it says, just come to the Osiris. That left out the preposition. Well, come, that's right. Come to, come to the Osiris, so-and-so. Her name is Aset-Weret. Great Isis was her name. Incidentally, most of these belong to women. We've always been using just the male gender here, but we do not have any male chauvinism here. Most of these are women. Most of these are priestesses, not men, but women, who drew them too. And that's the thing that we underestimate, because this is all talking about priesthood all over the place here. So, let me see now this drawing. The interpretation of the drawings, which everyone is tempted to try his hand, is a luxury. I'm not going to talk about the special separate pictures now. That we must be forgone at present. Why? Because there is more relevant matter to be considered, more specific data which claim priority. We refer, of course, to the written text. That's the first place to look if we have something specific. And it would be well to turn to the fullest text available. These are faulty ones. I'm going to give you the two best of the beauties of them. They're found on the two most elaborate and well executed of all the hypocephali, though they're by a different hand, they're not by professionals, namely the Leiden hypocephalus and the Henry Muir hypocephalus, so designated by Bush. So these are the ones we come to now, the Leiden one. You see, if we compare these now, we showed you they're enough alike so that we can treat them now as generic, you see. We want to find out what all hypocephali stood for before we can get to the Joseph Smith, which is a very particular item. That's very particular, just like Joseph Smith's facsimile one. follows a very familiar pattern, but very special. There are half a dozen things on that you'll find nowhere else, though you'll find hundreds of reproductions of that particular picture. It's the same thing here. Well, anyway, so we want to find out the standard hypocephal. The best clue to its nature and message lies in what the whole generic family has to teach us. And we begin with the great Leiden hypocephalus, which was studied by Lehmanns, Carl Lehmanns. I realize we got it upside. This is right side up. Notice he has numbered them too. The only other person who's numbered the figures was Joseph Smith, but he has numbered them something like ours. Notice he counts. Hard to find the numbers here. There's number one there. Is this? Yeah, this is the Leiden. Here's number six. You see. Here's number two. There's number two. You see. This is number one. If you can find it. Number one. Number two. He only numbered four. This is number four. It's upside down, not six. This is four. Just the four, three main panels. See, four, three, two, and one. And that's the order in which they appear. And Joseph Smith is right there. Of course, he names the others. So we read the rim here and see what we're talking about now. E Jebabti. Oh, now. Oh, Jebabti. Now, there is a word. We really stick on. This is the most important word in the whole thing. Jebabti. In the house, there's a house, you see. It's a temple. In the house of the Ben-Ben. That's the great son. We'll see what it is. Of the house of Ben-Ben. Most exalted. See, he's raising it. Ka. That's the word. Ka. Our word cognate with our word high. Ka. Most high. See, it's double there. That means double. Emphasize high, high. Kai, kai. Double, double. And this is the Ach bird. The Ach glorious bird. Achu bird. Means glorious, but again, Hornung is right. He says you must never try to translate one of these words. It just won't do, because there are a dozen different words. Does it mean glorious? Does it mean bird? Does it mean, what is it, spirit of light or something? Anyway, it's a symbol. But anyway, it means most glorious. Again, see, it's doubling, duplicating. And then it says bull neket, copulating bull here. And mighty God, pehet, that's netcher pehet, and great. Great and mighty God in the temple. There's the number temple. Now here's an interesting thing. Maybe we could turn the thing upside down. But it's on the side here, you see. Here is the house again, and here is a man walking with a staff, and here's an old man leaning on a staff. Now this is translated by everybody in different ways. It's called, some call it the house of the prince, the house of the great old man, the house of the great mysterious one, the house of the temple of the primal one. And what it is, the temple of the, this is talking about Heliopolis, which is not what it was. The Ancient of Days is a good rendering for it. See, this is the word for great, ser, where, shemsu. It means great in any sense, or shemsu. And this means the word for old, iau, the word for old, or teni, the words for old. This is the word for old, the man leaning on the stick. The word for great and exalted is the man with the stick. And he's usually drawn inside the temple, but they don't have room for him here. So, in the house of the Ancient of Days, and then he goes, now here's Heliopolis. This is the center of everything. This is the shrine of Heliopolis. That's the Spear of Horus, and those are the two great standing stones, and that's what this is. And then here, what he's asking for, the prayer is, come to Yima, we're looking at upside, Yima 2, that's an alternate way of writing the word 2, it could be an N, but this is written with the crown, which has the same phonetic value. And come to the Osiris, that means the person is dead. And then he gives his name here, what it is, the Iawer. And this shows that it's his name here, because this is Ma'ero, that he's dead. And who is the son of so-and-so, that in, yes, who is the son of so-and-so, who is the son of the lady of the house, so-and-so. And then it goes up here, and what do we have here? Yeah, that's another Ma'ero. There's a Ma'ero, you see. And then, too bad it runs over the edge here. Grant thou that he become, that's your Heper, you see, that's your Heper, become a sign. Grant thou that he become, some S, like, that he become like, well, that she become, again, it's another woman we're talking about, that she become like, like Wa M Shemsu, like one among the followers, like one among thy followers. You see, that she become me like Wa one with phonetic Wa M among Shemus. That's the staff with a bundle on it. F
followers, Shemesh, that's the phonetic complement here, and there's walking along, and that's the plural to show there's a lot of them, and thine, thy possessive, like one of thy followers. And in test, she is a god. See, you always have to have that. That makes the blunt statement. She is a god. And T, who is in, and there it is, you see, there is the house of the great old man, the house of the ancient of days. And there's the old man, the great man in the house, and there's the old man coming up in Heliopolis. It ends up where it begins, in Heliopolis, always there. Now, a few remarks about this are in order here. Oh, wait a minute. Guess this Jebabti. I say, this is where the emphasis, this is a recent discovery, but the emphasis comes on this now. And it's a very important thing here. So it reads this thing, come to Osiris, justify. The one thing we can be sure of in this strange text is that it is a prayer. Its significance is confirmed by the inscriptions on the two panels on either side. You'll have to read them too then. Then the case won't be. This is the same thing. Then, O thou noble Ba, is praying to the spirit, you see. O thou noble Shepsis Ba, thou shining one in on high, in heavens on high, cause Sehwedget, who causes the earth to be illuminated, Sehwedge, see, Hedge, there's this casting down rays, causing the earth to be illuminated in the day of his birth. So it's the birthday. It must be the time of birthday that you make this connection. Always the time and the place must cohere. And so he says, causing, illuminating the earth, this is when a new age begins, at his birthday, Mes F, in his birthday. And then here's what he's praying for. Di ech anek, give thou life. And anek to the Ba, and Wedja, di ech anek Ba, life to the Ba, and Wedja, again we use that word for Wedja, and it means to be hale, to be hearty, to hold together, to survive, endurance, and endurance to the corpse. This is the spirit, this is the corpse. These are the two that must be brought together. See, this I say, that's the stinking fish. It's decayed, you see. But he doesn't want it to decay, so he says, grant thou life to the spirit and soundness, firmness to the corpse of the god, and renewal to his, there's your seal again. Renewal. This is the word seha, which means the mummy, the completed, ready to go, the sealed inside mummy, and youth, rumpet, and youth to the mummy of the Osiris, and his name is Tiat, justified. So this is what, there's the prayer, and there's what he's desiring. And here again, it's a little different. Oh thou God, oh Pepi, this God, Sepsis, noble and sitting, Sa'anik M, causing to, there we have it again, you see, causing to live by air or in air, and walking forth from the water, coming forth from the water, some say in the water it might be, well, this is Jimmy, come. Come thou, Osiris. And this is an interesting thing thou, Osiris, said, Er Sejum, notice he's hearing, Er Sejum Heroi, upon the hearing of my voice, his prayer, come at my call, at my beseeching, at my prayer. Come, he says, yes, this is Ee Re Netu, of course, God, Er at the Sejum Heroi, of my hair, of my voice. Come at the sound, well, notice this plural, of my calls. Of my words, well, Heru is my calling, my complaint, because he's praying for deliverance. Yimi, now this is, come Osiris, that's the sign, here he's coming along, you see. Yimi, and come to the Osiris, here he is, Tiat again, who is justified, and then, and cause him to be Nejiso, M, he hasn't got room to write the rest here, cause him to be firm in the Het Nevet, in everything, cause him to be Nejus, oh, it's Nejus, cause him to be Nejus in everything. M Het Nevet, he's barely got it in. So you see, he's praying for something, that's the important thing here. Now, it was a prayer. And the panel on the left. Well, here the deceased prays that some radiant being, equated to Re himself, may come down, he calls him an Anak here, may come down and deliver him or her, Osiris, NN, he calls himself, from his present condition. Now let's turn to the other prize hypocephalus, the Henry Mur. It's equally gorgeous, you see. This is the same thing. But this has a different inscription around the outside. Now, this is going to be different here. Here, this is on the rim we read, beginning at the top. I am an Och. Emha in coming down in the Duat, to the Duat. So he's announcing, this is the answer to the prayer. I am the glorified bird. You remember, it showed the bird, whether it has a head makes no difference, or whether it has a bird's head. In the one case, it's Horus. In the other case, it's the person's own Ba, or it's Ray. Ray is the one who comes down. You see, it becomes anybody who comes down. So these things are interchangeable here. So he says, I am an Ach, a glorified Shef. This means most noble and glorious. In the act of coming down in the Dat, in the Duat, to, this is Ardit Chawit Jet F. This is a common formula in the funerary rites. It means to do your work for you. Ardit means to give or to cause a grant. And Chawit means the affairs. You Chawit is the affairs you're dealing with, your business. The thing that has to be done in the matter of your body here, and this is the jet, this is the person's body, the corpse, the solid body, you see. So I have come down to administer to the affairs of your body. I give heaven to your Ba, that is Pet, you see, to your Ba. I give the secret shrine, this is Sesha, and this is the word Arik, the word for shrine, and this is the word Sesha, and I give the secret shrine to your mummy. Now this is this thing again. That's the seal, supposedly, and that's the noble. The mummy is always called noble in this sense. He calls it the Secha. The Secha is the noble mummy which is prepared. Everything has been done except the final steps to getting him out of there. And that's when you reach this state. So he gives that, distributing that, and then he says, I come forth from the Wedjat eye. There's the eye, you see. He comes forth in it or from it. See, this is the iris of the eye here on this side. He comes forth in it or from it. I am ink. Menti. Oh, yes. I am MN. Many. Many M. Oh, yes. I'm remaining. I'm quite sure that's remaining. This is your secret shrine. This is Seshtan. There's a picture of the Kara shrine, secret shrine. And then, being quite upside down here, he shines down. I shine down from. I am an excellent spirit, I suppose. Among the treflisher. This is usually called the treflisher. Among this word is the kedi, the excellent. It's called kemi too. Those who are qualified, those spirits, the excellent spirits that are qualified, and all the rest of them. And then he says, upside down, I am, the gods, I am coming forth. Oh, I come forth, this is Ak, I come forth and I enter, rather. Ak is to enter, of course. I enter and I come forth. This is very common. See, I come and go at will. See, I come, I go, and preach from among the excellent, the Yikaru, the excellent, the proven, the tested ones. And he keeps repeating I all along here. It's the first person talk. The other was praying to someone. This is talking to something. I am a Ba, a great Ba. Oh, I am a Ba, and then it's Tehi Shem. That means a brilliant, shining. Tehi is jewelry, is the glitter of crystal and jewels and so forth. It's that kind of a bird. They call him that before the Sab. You see, the dappled bird, and here he's called the bejeweled one. But he, in his forms, he has dazzling forms. And remember, this bird that comes down, he is the bird of light. He puts on quite a show, and so this is the word Tehni, Tehenu, Tehenu Sem, shining of his forms, in his forms. And then he says, in his forms. And again he says, I come forth from the Duat whenever I please, whenever he pleases, Ermeref, at his will, at pleasure. So I come forth in it, go and come. But he's going to get out of hell. That's the one thing, you see. I come forth from the dot, as he wishes. I come again. I come and I go forth in the Wedjat eye. This enables me to pass it again. That's the perfect eye that passes it. And again, I didn't count how many eyes is. This guy's an egotist, this bird is. I come forth again from the duet along with Ray. God, in the end, what he wants to do is join the company of Ray so that he'll get out of the underworld and be able to take him to a permanent orbit in heaven. So I come forth from the dot along with Henoch, Ray here, in again the house of the old man. It always ends up in Heliopolis there, the house of the grand old man, the ancient one, the ancient of days in Heliopolis. And there's your three thrones with the, it's rather a squat pyramidion here, and this is the kind we have in the Joseph Smith one at the top there. Time's passing here. So he prays that the most brilliant he comes to him and so forth. From these two texts, the situation is clear, as the rationale behind it all shall become clear as well. The Leiden Rim is a prayer to and for a heavenly deliverer. The rim of the Mu Hypocephalus is the answer to that prayer. This is what is now recognized as the standard scenario, that Osiris prays for Ra to come and deliver him, come down, join with him and deliver him, so he can follow him up, join the following of Ra, and go on to heaven with him. The Joseph Smith Hypocephalus gives us the rim. Well, I think this should be the next one, the Joseph Smith one it is. Oh, no. Well, let me see if we've got... can go backwards here. Yeah, let me see if I can go to the Joseph Smith one here. Yeah, here's the Joseph Smith one here. Let's see what the rim of this one says then. This is damaged, as you can see here. But this is the one where he answers, I am Jebabti. But this is Jebab, this is the archaic form, in the house of the Benben, in Heliopolis, most exalted, and this is the most glorious, was knocked out, damaged. And this is the cow, the victorious bull, rather, the Kaneket, the victorious bull, who has no equal, Nen Shenen, Shenen seed, Shen is equal, two signs, who has no equal sign here. And then he says, God comes forth, let me see, from the, well, in the, again, the house of the Benjamin, and repeats it again. Here is most established in the house of the Benven, and then in Heliopolis. Then it goes around to the top, and here again, this squat little thing, that's what we saw in that last one, where it was this sign on it was squat. There wasn't room for it, so they just pitched in. That means Heliopolis too, that's the same place. That's the same place as this one. And it's on the top of the Joseph Smith. And this just says, Ntef, he is a god. He is this god in Heliopolis. So it ends the same way that other one's in the Lemuel, when the girl is called, she is the god who is in Heliopolis. So this ends up the same way. So then, this great god in the temple of the Benben at Heliopolis. Thou art great God in Heliopolis, etc. Well, then, in his study on... Now here, we must make an excursion. Because I have time for it, if it's important. Is that word Jeba here, that begins the top here? The Jeba. It's a funny looking thing, which we'll see, but I haven't used the blackboard yet. I should have done that for Jeba. Well, Hermann Kiesch wrote a whole book on that. Well, it was a monograph on that one sign. I think it's about the longest in the dictionary. I found 14 pages in the Werther book defining this word, and he said they're all connected. This is what you're up against in Egyptian. But this is very important because of a recent discovery, you might call it, concerning this particular word, which has a lot to do with the Joseph Smith. And this study concluded that all Jeba words are related, sometimes over a wide gap, which had thus the idea of a stopper. The original idea is something that plugs up a gap, that fills a long-felt want, fills a need. He comes out, he says, and wherever it's used, it always is something that fills a need. But it's the idea of a stopper, a plug. It's the word for Jeba, it's the word for brick, you see, it's the same way, because a brick fills up it plugs up something. It's a plug, a replacement, suggesting the paying of a debt. You fill it off, you fill it in, you see. Or the writing of a defect. See, if there's a hole in, you fill the hole, you've righted the defect. Hence the settling of scores. See, one thing leads to another, and then you go all over the place here. And refers to the combat between Horus and Seth at Heliopolis. There have been grammars of Arabic written on the theory that all Arabic is derived from just one word. And they're quite serious, too. dead of writing a defect, hence the settling of scores, and referred to the combat between Horus and Set at Heliopolis. That's what it, likewise, the idea of improving appearance. This suggests clothing, adorning in sacred garments, hence the change of garments. Bharata takes this very seriously here. The bestowing of a quality by sensing or anointing, including the acquiring of the Wedjat eye. Setha explains the basic meaning as substitution, see, or repayment, putting back, filling in something that's been that's missing, as settling scores by Horus the Behtatite, avenging his father at Heliopolis. Or, Jebabti, DeWitt interprets as the place of retribution, the place where the serpent was smitten and the score was even. Spelaers, in his assortment of rim texts, has invoked Osiris in 4 and 2 others call upon Ammon, but 5 of them call upon Jebabti, and who is he? He says, well, it's a surname of Osiris. But the archaic form which appears in our hypocephalus as Jabti, is that what it has? Yeah, there, Jebet. That one, what about it? Gotta follow arrows all over the place. Is a person, as Lehmann's notes, from the key text in the Hypocephalus. He is the president of the Heret Netzeri, who is Re at the temple of the exalted Benben, he calls him that, who is Re himself at the temple. Well, in the latest Hypocephaly, all have been replaced by the simple Ba of Osiris. From inscriptions we learn that Jebat is a place or an island that contains the great secret which is found in the Duat, that's the other world, illumined by the disk of Re. In one relief, the god is depicted extending his hand from the Jebat, the secret place which the gods themselves do not know. Well, we could go on and on with this sort of thing, you know. It's a haunting thing. The Jebat is the ancient name of Edfu. It's the ancient name of Buto, the oldest city in Egypt. It also applies to Re there. Keese noted that Horus of Edfu is called Jebabti as a play on the name of Edfu itself. Steindorf equates Jebab to the grave of the king because the king was always born... Because the king was always buried under the Jebab, he says, on which his living ka sits. It's something on which he sits. This relates it to Kay's emphasis on the Jebab as the dwelling place of the king. For Driaton, Jebabti is Adam. Imagine as dominating the waters, the celestial waters, on his flotteur. Because what that represents is a float, you see. It's a, Jebabti, it's a goatskin float, which was used for tying a harpoon on when you harpooned a hippopotamus, when the king harpooned a hippopotamus, there was this float to bob around like your bob. You see, to bob around and show her where the hippopotamus was, and it was to keep the game going. And that's it. Oh, we have to tie it together here. So it was a raft made of skins, inflated skins, and tied together, and that was the Jebabti of all things. But the idea of something floating in space, or something in between, this is the basic thing that we run into in the dramatic texts we come to. For Debuk, the Jebabti is the one who is on the Jebab, who sails in his holiness, who dwells in holiness. But the Adam, you see, Adam imagined as ruling the waters, the celestial waters, on his raft. And then Jebabti is the title of the high priest of Memphis, but it's also the epithet of Osiris, Horus, or Khonsu, you name it, it's Jebab. As payment, a provision, the Jebab, or food, provisions, hence offerings. Hence Bergman's pronouncement, Jan Bergman's pronouncement, that the Jebab is the greening fields where Osiris is, and Michael Rhodes' translation of Jebabti as great provider. Not only are all Jebab words related, but all special applications are derived from a single basic idea of supplying what is needed. That's the final quotation of Case. In dramatic text, there are many words which Jebab, which may be intended, and now which is the payoff. The Egyptians themselves had no idea what it meant. So now this has been very helpful, hasn't it? No, but Herman Case, Sather, who wrote on this too, he said the Egyptians must have had many ideas in mind and various combinations which still escape us. Sather notes the historic times, the Egyptians themselves had no clear idea of what it meant. Well, since it meant so many things, used in so many different ways, it's not clear what the Egyptians meant, what do we do about it in that case? All this trouble because of the latest study, that's what it is now. Now, Oh, I got to call it off now.
And now the rethinking of Egyptian religion gives us a new term to this meaning of Djebapti, one of great importance to the understanding of the hypocephali. It's Djebademti. I might as well write it on here. Djeba, yes. That should be an A. One right with an A. And Dem G. That's the way the Germans are. Djeba Dem G. What in heaven's name could that mean? This is an extremely important thing. Barta also writes as Deba Demedi, likewise. He says it contains in itself all possible aspects of the sun in the lower world. It is the sacred secret name of Re when he embraces his father, when they pass the veil, you see the bit. The name which he is saluted when he comes down below to perform the ordinance of the resurrection during his nightly passage through the lower world. Deba Jemdi, as Re Osiris, he always renders it, it should be rendered, if you're translating it, as this. Never as Re Osiris, but always Re stroke Osiris. This is what it stands for, Re Osiris, in that moment when they meet together, you see. This is what it's either the embrace or the resurrection the other way. The expression he uses is this, exorbitant importance, he says. Deba Djemdi, as Re Osiris, is represented always as the ram-headed human mummy crowned with the solar disk. The ram, that's the code again, you see. Now he says, exorbitant importance is placed on the title, according to Barta, who points to the name on the ceiling of the tomb of Ramses II, along with a graphic depiction of the sun in his orbit. Things are so arranged in that picture that this salutation, Djeba Demdji, when you pray to him, Djeba Demdji occurs exactly at the point in space and time at which the sun alters its course. That's what it means. Djeba Demdji is you at changing your course of life for eternity, shifting from the local branch to the main line here. In this context, we are take Djeba as indicating one adorned, invested, authorized. While Demji has the usual meaning of union or joining, for Barta renders it der Geschmückte des Vereinigten Seins, a very fancy term, the adorned one of the moment of unity, of the des Vereinigten Seins. That is, he says, Re Osiris. That's one that has to be rendered doubly there. It is Djebapti, the owner of the hypocephalus, claims an assured place for himself in the scheme of things as the ever ongoing life, in the ever ongoing life of the universe. All of this forcibly recalls the mysterious early Christian teaching of the descensus, 1 Peter 3:20, you know, and the Gospel of Nicodemus, and then you get it in the mystery plays and so forth, the early Christian mystery plays and like, the harrowing of hell, when the Lord goes down and to deliver the souls in prison, he opens the gates. In these books, incidentally, the stories from the king's tombs, like, it always tells how the Lord goes up and opens the gates, and how he goes from place to place and preaches to the people from a boat. While the spirits gather on the shore and listen to him, he gives them a sermon in the boat. And then he goes on to the next one, and the gates close behind him, and the people mourn for the time while they will see him come again, and they'll see a countenance again. Well, this pattern is very Egyptian, you can say that, because that's the Amduet, the great book called the Amduet we're talking about there. But he preaches them to them as the Lord of Heaven does to the damned spirits in the Amduet. And the blessed also, when it ends, you see, when this medieval, not the medieval, 5th century, 6th century is Nicodemus, all the spirits, when they finally, who accept the teaching and the preaching which they hear, they all leave, following Adam. There's a great procession with Adam leading the head of the parade. He leads them all out there. So he leads them up, he's Deba Djemdji, as far as that goes. And of course, in Egypt, it's Adam. Is Adam Adam? Well, some people like Lefebvre believe he was, and there's certainly very close ties between them. He leads the procession of the followers of Christ from the prison to the mansions on high. So we have a basic pattern here as the first step in understanding what we've got to do with our Joseph Smith papyrus, hypocephalus. There's still a long ways to go, and it's late now, and you're as tired as I am, so let's call it off at this point. It's all preparation. I was just coming to the good part now. But that gives us a reason for coming back. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a soul around the next time. So thank you very much for this, for suffering this obfuscation that I've been putting on. It hasn't been deliberate, you know. I don't make it deliberately confusing. I'm just confused, is all.
Well, if Brother...